I feel like I should give a warning to this sermon. As I was writing it, I came across this quiz that was from 1998, and it just made me stop and think. It's entitled, How Welcoming Is Your Congregation? It was in The World, and it's a Christophobia quiz. It's not welcoming in the sense of GLBT or folk of color, but welcoming in the sense of our theological diversity and whether or not folks who identify as UU Christians are really welcome in our congregations. And how often we give apology for speaking of God and Jesus and the Christian stories that for many of us were part of our childhood and still part of our journey. So that was in my mindset as I was crafting this. And walk with me on this journey as we do that exploration of one of the days that is most significant in the Christian calendar and what we as Unitarian Universalists might glean from that. We read in the Christian scriptures, Gospel of Matthew, chapter 21, verses 1 through 11. When they had come near Jerusalem and reached Bethphage at the Mount of Olives, Jesus sent two disciples, saying to them, Go into the village ahead of you, and immediately you will find a donkey tied and a colt with her. Untie them and bring them to me. And if anyone says anything to you, just say this, the Lord needs them, and he will send them immediately. This took place to fulfill what had been spoken through the prophet, saying, Tell the daughter of Zion, look, your king is coming to you humble and mounted on a donkey and on a colt, the foal of a donkey. The disciples went and did as Jesus directed them. They brought the donkey and the colt and put their cloaks on them, and he sat on them. And a very large crowd spread their cloaks on the road, and others cut branches from the trees and spread them on the road. The crowds that went ahead of him and that followed him were shouting, Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest heaven. When he entered Jerusalem, the whole city was in turmoil, asking, Who is this? And the crowds were saying, This is the prophet from Nazareth in Galilee. That was the Gospel of Matthew. The Gospels of Mark, Luke, and John tell the same story. And unusual in biblical canon or the Gospels, almost verbatim. And from this simple story consisting of 11 verses, we get the traditions of Palm Sunday, this Sunday on the Christian calendar. Traditional or Orthodox Christianity looks to Palm Sunday as a high holy day, third only to Easter and Christmas, the beginning of Holy Week when Jesus willingly and triumphantly, and that's a key word, entered Jerusalem with full awareness of his ultimate fate. In Christian traditions, in simplest terms, Palm Sunday is the occasion for reflecting on the final week of Jesus' life, to prepare their hearts for the agony of his passion and the joy of his resurrection. But we Unitarian Universalists are not, and truly have never been, traditional or Orthodox Christians. Even when we did identify as Christian. And though our faith is deeply rooted in Christianity, neither our Unitarian nor Universalist forebears were ever considered traditional or Orthodox. We were banned from a lot of Christian circles. And we have always understood and experienced Jesus and Christianity differently than our traditional brethren. For UUs, one of the most significant differences between traditional Christianity and our interpretation has always been the unity of God, hence the nomenclature Unitarian. God is not three, or Trinitarian, in our understanding. God is one, or Unitarian. That's part of our name, it's part of our tradition. Thus, Jesus, for us, was not himself God, but rather an amazing human being, a human being who recognized, lived, and actualized the divinity within himself. That same divinity that resides in each of us. And personally, I find this Unitarian Universalist Christianity welcoming and hopeful. precisely because it affords me, you, all of us, the opportunity to recognize, live, and actualize that spark of the divine within us, within each of us. Genesis tells us that we are made in the image and likeness of God, however you understand that term, and today's not an exploration of God. The Gospels of Matthew and John have Jesus telling his disciples that with faith, you or we will do greater works than he. Our Unitarian Universalist Christianity affirms these messages, gives us a Jesus, a man, a human being like ourselves, greater than ourselves only in that he fulfilled his potential, lived the divinity within himself, and by his life and story invites us to live more fully the divinity within ourselves. Today is Palm Sunday, so what might we, with that understanding, glean from today? Well, in true UU tradition, let's dig into the story a little more deeply and parse it. Ancient Eastern traditions held that the donkey was a symbol of peace versus the horse, which was a symbol of war. See, a king came riding on a horse when he was bent on war and rode a donkey when he wanted to make known that he was coming in peace. And likewise, ancient Eastern traditions held that it was customary to cover the path of someone worthy of the highest honor. The gospel story holds both elements, the donkey and the cloaks and branches on Jesus' path. Thus, symbolically, the writers created the Prince of Peace. The story also refers very specifically to one Judaic prophecy, that of Zechariah 9:9, which states, "Rejoice greatly, O daughter Zion. Shout aloud, O daughter Jerusalem. Lo, your king comes to you, triumphant and victorious is he, humble and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." John Dominic Crossan, who is considered the premier Jewish or Jesus scholar, writes in Jesus, a Revolutionary Biography, "This incident is not based on general Davidic or Mosaic models known to every Jew, but to a very precisely to one single prophecy. It seems more what scribes look backward to find rather than what people look forward to see." He writes, "I do not think, in other words, that it ever actually happened, except as later symbolic retrojection." He makes up that word, retrojection. So we as UUs can understand the story of Palm Sunday, of Jesus' triumphal entry, as just that, a good story, with significant symbolism and meaningful reference to prophecy. We use our intellect to come to that. That's what we do as a tradition, but we can't stop there, because it is also a story of great risk, of taking that journey, of making that leap of faith, of stepping through fear into great peril for something greater than one's life. Because truly, Jesus must have known what was coming. Our traditional Orthodox brethren believe that Jesus knew his fate because God told him what was coming. And I believe this might be possible, that mystical experiences occur and we can have flashes of insight foretelling us of what is to come. But even if you do not believe that Jesus was told by God of his ultimate fate, Rome was unequivocal in how it dealt with troublemakers. Crucifixion was the awful and ultimate result. And make no mistake, Jesus was a troublemaker in the eyes of Rome. He stirred up the people with talk of peace and love and care. He preached and taught that the rules of Rome might constrict people's daily lives and freedoms, but not, and more significantly, the freedoms of their heart and mind and spirit. Troublemaker, rabble-rouser. And his first act, according to the Gospels, after his triumphal entry, was to cause more trouble by going to the temple and turning over the tables of the money changers. So this troublemaker took the ultimate risk by entering Jerusalem. And remember, filled Jerusalem at that moment with Roman soldiers and the Roman governor during the Jewish Feast of Passover, when the crowds were at their highest and the guards on their most alert for trouble. So he entered, knowing full well that his presence would only bring more trouble upon himself, and that this trouble would likely end in his own death. So what are we to make of that decision? If Jesus' life is significant to us at all, as a symbol of what we ourselves might be, as a prophet that we in our own tradition look up to, what might we make of his decision, his leap of faith, his risk with full awareness of the consequences? How might we, or might we, hear the message to live courageously, fearlessly? Might we understand that it often takes risk to change that which we feel must be changed? William Arthur Ward penned the poem Risk, which I return to every couple of months as a reminder. To laugh is to risk appearing a fool. To weep is to risk appearing sentimental. To reach out to another is to risk involvement. To expose feelings is to risk exposing your true self. To place your ideas and dreams before a crowd is to risk their loss. To love is to risk not being loved in return. To hope is to risk despair. To try is to risk failure. But risks must be taken, because the greatest hazard in life is to risk nothing. The person who risks nothing does nothing, has nothing, is nothing. He may avoid suffering and sorrow, but he cannot learn, feel, change, grow, live. Chained by his servitude, he is a slave who has forfeited all freedom. Only the person who risks is free. To act in any capacity is to risk. And Arthur Alice Walker writes, in Anything We Love Cannot, Anything We Love Can Be Saved, all that we own, at least for the short time we have it, all that we own is our life. With it, we write what we come to know of the world. I have learned to accept the fact that we risk disappointment, disillusionment, even despair every time we act. Every time we decide to believe the world can be better. Every time we decide to trust others to be as noble as we think they are. And that there might be years during which our grief is equal to or even greater than our hope. The alternative, however, not to act and therefore to miss experiencing people at their best, reaching toward their fullness, has never appealed to me. She continues, there is always a moment in any kind of struggle when one feels in full bloom, vivid, alive. Martin Luther King at the mountaintop, Gandhi dying with the name of God on his lips, Sojourner Truth baring her breasts at the Women's Rights Convention in 1851, Harriet Tubman exposing her revolver to some of the slaves she had freed who, fearing an unknown freedom, looked back longingly to their captivity, thereby endangering the freedom of all. To be such a person or to witness someone, anyone at this moment of transcendent presence, is to know that what is human is linked by daring compassion to what is divine. So Palm Sunday, and Jesus is risking the journey into Jerusalem knowing the consequences. Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi, Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, risk takers all, troublemakers each, amazingly inspirational persons, but I am not them. And I wager that none of you are either. Just speculation. Personally, I like living. A little fond of it. And I like my life. And I am not ready, And I am not certain, I'm not convinced that my personal duty calling is to risk my life, my family, my home, my security, to make an ultimate sacrifice. But I do hear in the message of today the call to step out on a journey of faith, to risk in hopes of making change in our world. Alice Walker again. It has become a common feeling, I believe, as we have watched our heroes falling over the years, that our small stone of activism, which might not measure up to the rugged boulder-building edifice of heroism we have so admired, that our small stone is but a paltry offering toward the building of an edifice of hope. And many who believe this choose to withhold their offerings out of shame. This is the tragedy of our world, for we can do nothing substantial towards changing the course on the planet, a destructive course, without rousing ourselves, individual by individual, and bringing our small, imperfect stones to the pile. Sometimes our stones are to us misshapen, odd, their color seems off. And presenting them, we perceive our own imperfect nakedness. But also, paradoxically, the wholeness, the rightness of it all. In the collective vulnerability of presence, we learn not to be afraid. I believe the message of Palm Sunday is this, that each of us is called to abandon the secure, comfortable, and comforting to take our individual pilgrimages. Jesus' message is not one that asks us to admire him from our easy chairs, or for our traditional brethren, even on their knees, but rather one that asks us to take the first step, and the second, and the third, to find what calls us from our comfort, to risk being uncomfortable for that which we love. And toward that end, I leave you with a simple story, with TC's story, how the simple and stubborn, risk of speaking up and not shutting up, and continuing to speak, changed a community. It was Oakland, California in 1995. New federal buildings were under construction downtown in the wake of the Oklahoma City bombing, so the buildings and the whole surrounding area was being redesigned or reconceptualized for ultimate safety, a state that is not very conducive to people's lives or to building community. And the neighborhood park, known to us all as Old Man's Park, was going to be redesigned to accommodate office personnel safely who wanted a breath of fresh air on their lunch hour. But for generations, this park had been the neighborhood center. It got its name, Old Man's Park, from the old men who gathered there every day, hot or cold, to share community and an intense game of chess or checkers or dominoes. Generations of youth from West and Center City, Oakland, had been raised in that park under the watchful eyes of their grandfathers. But the urban planners, in the wake of the Oklahoma City bombing, saw Old Man's Park as too much of a security risk, too close to those new federal buildings, so the checkerboards and chessboards had to go. And because many of the city's homeless persons spent their days also hanging out in Old Man's Park, city leaders were all too eager to install divided benches, which explicitly discouraged anyone from laying down. But TC had been raised there. Picked up from school every afternoon by his grandfather, they walked to the park where he played with other kids, gleaned wisdom from his elders, and learned the fierce protective love of his grandfather. And when TC learned that the park all that gave the park character and made it his and countless others home away from home was to go, he risked his comfort, he risked his job with the city to ask for help. And he was stubborn. He didn't do anything more than talk, but he did not stop talking. He talked to the homeless coordinator for the city. He talked to every church that would let him. He talked to civic groups. He talked to strangers in coffee shops and laundromats and bodegas. He stopped people on the bus and on the street. He talked. That's all he did. But he talked. He was a man on a mission. His wife thought him crazy. His boss warned him to stop talking. But he did not. He could not let this park die because its death signaled the death of the last symbol of community in this neighborhood. See, that part of the neighborhood had been cut off from West Oakland when they built the Nimitz Highway in 1959, and this park was all they had left as a community center. And eventually, because TC wouldn't shut up, because he kept the risk of talking, stubbornly not stopping, he found someone to listen. And it became a neighborhood project, saving the park, and eventually got the attention of Professor Walter Hood from the UC Berkeley School of Urban Design that took on the project and actually held a design contest for his students for the best mixed-use park. Someone wrote and got a grant for those students, and Professor Hood invited neighborhood members, including TC and his grandfather, to help judge the contest. Old Man's Park, or more officially, Lafayette Square Park, reopened in 1999 as a model in urban design. And the San Francisco Chronicle headline heralded Lafayette Square celebrated as a symbol of hope. New fountain and performance area, new planting and trees, new bathrooms and benches, and shiny new chess and checkerboards. A victory for community, a victory for TC, who took the risk of talking to anyone and everyone he could find. Just talking. On this Palm Sunday, may we each take the risk to step out of our security and comfort to take our individual pilgrimages. Jesus' message is to take the first step, and the second, and the third. To find that which calls us from our comfort, to risk being uncomfortable for that which we love. Each of us has a holy path, one we are walking. We are called this Palm Sunday to reaffirm that path and our own unique pilgrimage, to place our small stone on the edifice of hope, to take the leap of faith and make the journey, to talk to anyone and everyone we can find and not stop. So may it be this Palm Sunday and all days. Amen and blessed be.